Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
You're a SaaS founder. You've built something solid, but growth still feels harder than it should. Most SaaS companies don't fail because of bad tech. They fail because they've never become a must-have to the right customer. This podcast is here to change that. I'm Ton Dobbe, and this is the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. Every week, I talk to founders in the trenches, facing friction, making bold moves, and building companies that last. We dig into real choices around focus, positioning, customer pool, team alignment, the things that separate forgettable software from the ones that people can't live without. No hype, no hacks. Just honest conversations to help you build something that people would miss if it was gone. If your SaaS should be indispensable but isn't yet, this is your podcast. Let's get into it. The guest on my podcast this week is Chris Brisson, CEO and co-founder of Sales Message.
We always take that approach, like, how are we going to disrupt ourselves before someone else does? All right, what are we going to do? How do we disrupt ourselves? And so, you know, just leaning into, hey, you know what, we got to kill that product, because the reality is that actually doesn't solve the problem. What really solves the problem is this.
That's Chris. We dig into how we killed a profitable company to build something customers actually need. We'll hear why he chose destruction over optimization and why removing friction beats adding features every time. It's a sharp conversation about solving outcomes instead of building features, and what happens when you choose to disrupt yourself before someone else does. Well, hi, Chris. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, well, that's likewise. There's going to be a lot of conversation about how you started the company and where you're up to with your company, Sales Message. But before we start on that, a little bit about you. What drives you? What gives you energy as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I love to create stuff. So, and when I say stuff, that's pretty broad. But I just love the you know, taking an idea and turning it into something tangible. And, yeah, you know, to be honest, I've been an entrepreneur my whole life. I've always started companies and, you know, just tried to solve my own problems. And ultimately, those problems have turned into businesses, not all problems. There's a great quote I love. It's, you know, problems are secret calls to adventure. And so some are worthy of going on the path and the journey, while others, you know, you get into it and you're like, you realize, well, I don't want to do the journey with that particular problem. So I just love to create. I love to see things be created. You know, we're a software company. We've got an amazing, amazing development team. And so I sort of get the pleasure to create ideas and see some of these ideas come to life. You know, I'm a marketer, business owner. So there's a lot of things that I personally want. And that, you know, helps shape some of the product that we build at Sales Message. And so, you know, I'm in touch, and I love to see some of the things that we build actually come to life, put it in our customers' hands, and get some awesome results. So it's fun. I just enjoy it. Like, to me, it's not really monetary. It's like, what's the achievement? What can we create? What can we accomplish? And cool. It just so happens money is the outcome of that. But for me, that is not my driver. I don't even own jewelry. You know, I don't even own a watch. I have watches. My wife's like, you should wear that watch. I'm like, I don't really want the watch. So, you know, to me, it's really just about creating and seeing things come to life.
Exactly. Well, it's exactly also the spirit with which I wrote my book, The Remarkable Effect. And I applaud for those entrepreneurs that measure the success by the impact they help customers create. And I mean, once you do that well, people start talking about it, and that value will come back in other ways, and often in bigger amounts than you can forecast for. So yeah, good for you.
100%.
Exactly. So, well, making the bridge then to your company sales message, from what I saw is you found that in 2017, so that's all right, 8 years ago now.
Don't tell me that.
Well, they say it's often what is it? Overnight success that took 10 years. So you're almost there. But what is the big idea behind your company? What was that spark that where you said, okay, this needs attention and I'm going to do it?
So it's funny you mentioned sort of the 10-year overnight success. So it actually started in 2010, actually 2009. And so I started a company called Call Loop back in 2009. And the idea with that was, I was doing consulting, helping companies launch products, right? So I'm going from idea to writing the copy to doing these big launches, like very successful launches, mostly, helping experts sort of take their expertise and launch that. So instantly going from like zero to hundreds of thousands of dollars in days. And so that was on the backs of like really great marketing. And so one of the things that we could do is we could automate, press releases, we could automate emails, but we couldn't automate voice, right? Outbound voice broadcast, as it was called. So I was like, oh, that's an interesting idea. Let me figure that out. And so Call Loop started with that idea. It ultimately turned into an outbound SMS marketing, outbound calling, or ring this voicemail platform. But about 5 years, running that business, 2015, it wasn't growing, it wasn't dying, it was like a zombie company. It was just right there. And I was like, ugh. And so, but the tech was not that great. And so the product broke a lot. And one of these instances, one of the customers was just sort of pretty upset. And so I realized, man, I got to do something different. And I realized that was not the product that would ultimately allow me to express my creativity, which is like creating great products, great software. And so I wrote a three-part blog series. This is 2015, February 2015. And the title of the email, which got into this three-part series, which sort of dripped out over about a week. I'm a copywriter, so I want to have some fun. And so the subject line was "The Death of Call Loop." I sent it out to about 34,000 people at the time. And it was crazy. But for me, it was very cathartic. And what it went into was the story of how I built a business that I secretly despised. And it was like, I like this business, but man, things are breaking. I couldn't fix it. And I was like, you know what? What if I could start all over? Knowing what I know now, which is a lot, man, what if I could just have a blank slate, start all over? And so I broke out a piece of paper and I said, all right, these are all the things I know, but what would I do different? Like, what would be the opposite of what I'm doing? How would I put myself out of business? And ultimately, the third part of that series was watch my journey as I reinvent Call Loop from the ground up on what I'm calling the second chance startup. And that was just this sort of nexus, casting an idea of like, I need to create something unique and different. And this was not what I wanted to sort of bring out to the world because it wasn't really, I couldn't solve problems. And I was like, ah, I want to solve that problem and that problem and that problem. And I couldn't, I was handcuffed. And so went down the path, created another product, a conferencing product that, no one wanted, but we spent a year building. About 6 months into that, I was like, what if I actually did reinvent it? And so through that, Sales Message was born. And so while Call Loop, which actually the company still exists today, focuses a lot on the outbound messaging, Sales Message is, the idea was I wanted to create a conversational texting platform, right? And so most of the platforms out there were just one way mass texting, but there's no way to sort of have a two-way text messaging interaction with a customer. And so I wanted like, hey, when someone fills out a form, I want to engage with them over SMS and start a conversation to move to a sale or a meeting. And it sort of started with that idea. We integrated into like Infusionsoft at the time, ActiveCampaign, HubSpot. Yeah. And so today it's become a lot more robust. So, you know, I like to say it's, you know, best of breed messaging and calling platform for sales, marketing, support teams. So companies from US, Canada, or just moving international, they use us to solve the speed to lead problem, right? We live in a world where no one picks up, they don't respond to email, but magically when you send a text, people reply. And so we do that really, really well. Built a lot of great tools. So there's shared inboxes, Teams, you know, we do calling, integrate super deep into HubSpot, Salesforce. And, you know, I like to say I'm biased, obviously, but we're one of the best, you know? And so I'm really proud of what we built. And it's awesome. Like, it's really exciting to, again, solve real problems and listen to customers. So,
fascinating story. I wouldn't have expected that to come, but it's thanks for that background. You touched upon a number of things that that always trigger me when I hear the words. One thing that I see that also has become a trait in my book is, you know, that curiosity, that keep digging for, okay, what's wrong here? Why not? Why different? Yeah. These type of things. You also mentioned the word different a couple of times. So tell me a little bit about, so when you took distance from what you did before, that solved the problem, but it sort of didn't take off. What did you do different in order for this to do take off? Did you ask different questions? I mean, how did that start?
Yeah. Again, it just started with sort of this piece of paper of knowing what I know now. If I could start all over, what would I do differently? And it was like, well, I know that, you know, and just without baggage, without sort of the shackles of what you got. Right. If you were to just reinvent it, recreate it, and just have unlimited possibilities, like what would you actually really want to create? Oh man, I want that. I want that. And so it just allowed this unlimited thinking. And again, this is 2015, 2016 ish. And it just, man, I would love to create that. And I always said, you know, there's a difference between like income and building a business. And so, you know, I had income. But I felt I wasn't really building a business. And so that was just sort of a deep-rooted itch to like, I want to create something great. I want to create a great company. And so what would that look like? And, you know, you don't realize that at the time, you know, you want to create something big. And so messaging, as I just sort of fell into it, it's a big opportunity. It's a global opportunity. And so that, you know, one, choosing that idea enables us to really build a real company. We have 65 plus employees all over the world. And so, I mean, I thought five was a lot, right?
I completely agree. Yeah, but I mean, to have a big problem and a big market doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be successful, you know? Because what you also said, there were a lot of other platforms and all these platforms did this. So what I also heard between the lines is that you took a stance and say, okay, hey, they are doing this. We're going to do sort of the opposite of that. You talked about making it conversational. Yeah. What are the insights from the start that you say, hey, in order, if we are going to start, we're not going to follow what's already done and try to make something better. We're going to build something different.
Yeah. You know, again, I knew a lot about the outbound sort of marketing with text messaging and everyone that was doing something of that, right? Some version of that. And I just thought, man, I don't, you know, people are trying to text, but I was going to a black hole. But what if we could create something like Gmail, right? For SMS, that would be kind of cool. And, you know, I use Infusionsoft. Let's integrate into that tool. And, you know, people use HubSpot. So let's build it into to that tool. And so, you know, the integration side of things became really important. Yeah. It also became like who actually was the user, who would be the customer. And so, you know, we, one, making it super simple, two, integrating into the tools and the stack people are already using and just consistently improving it, right? So you mentioned like the curiosity side. I love to get to like the deep rooted root cause and, you know, the true detail of solving a real problem. It's one thing to say, oh, we integrate into that tool through Zapier, right? Or we integrate into that and we do this. But it's another thing to uncover all of, you know, just the nuances of like, hey, I really wish I could have that piece of data, you know, in this payload from a webhook. Oh, that's interesting, right? Oh, I could see how that works. And so it's funny, you know, a couple of years ago, a customer was comparing us to a lot of the tools out there. And so he, you know, had all the companies and he had sort of these columns of all the features he wanted, right? Or rows and whatever. And so as he was starting to compare us against all the tools, he was like, he got, you know, six or seven features in. He's like, Sales Message has all this and these other guys don't. And so that just comes down to like trying to solve all those like minute problems that people don't know they have until they get there. And then you're like, oh, well, we have that. Yeah, we have that. And you're like, oh my gosh, you know? And so I just love to learn. I love to like dive in, talk to a customer. You know, I remember there's one customer that off the cuff, they just mentioned it. We just did a call with them and they're like, yeah, it'd be really cool just to like not have to like import our contacts. If I could just search the CRM and just have it magically appear in Sales Message, that would be amazing. And, but they didn't say it that way. That's what I heard. They said it like, I just wish my HubSpot contacts were in there. Oh, that's interesting. And it just sort of exploded that idea of creating like a true deep integration that made it really easy, right? Because you think, well, how do you get contacts in a CRM? You export it, you do this, you import it. Yeah. But what if that didn't happen at all? Like you just log in, connect it, and then bam, it's all there. And so getting to, you know, I like to say is like, what's the easy button, right? And how do you get to all this messy middle and get rid of all of that and just get to the end outcome? You know, AI helps out with a lot with that. And so how do you really just get rid of friction to get to what they really want? And that is fun for me, is thinking through, that takes six clicks. What if we got to like one or zero, you know? And that's sort of consistent like friction removal creates great products.
Let me make a small interruption here. Chris just made an excellent remark that sets his approach apart from conventional software thinking. While most companies layer complexity to justify their existence, Chris eliminates steps that customers never wanted in the first place. This is what remarkable software companies do. They acknowledge they cannot please everyone. They master the art of curiosity and then focus on the essence. Do you want to master these traits as well? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview. Yeah, what I hear here is that you're not going, okay, and we need to build all these features. You look at the outcome and then you start to re-engineer back. How do you get to that outcome in the simplest way? To your point, even what if it was zero clicks? What if it just happened?
100%.
Because so many software engineers are just tied up with making that 10th version better screen of what they already have. And that's not even what customers want. I mean, I come from the ERP world. We were always obsessing about let's make an even slicker timesheet entry screen. Well, people hate it. So then they will hate it less. See what I mean?
Yeah,
I like that approach, and I've heard it a couple of times. The last interviews that I did, there was one recently that actually took an 80-click process to one. Also, with the same mindset, what is the easy button? What if it just happened? And I think that is all about if you want to create something different, you have to really step back miles and look at it from a completely different perspective. Because it's at the end, the customers buy outcomes. They buy progress. They buy something that they're proud of to accomplish. And the software is just in the middle. Fascinating. Have you, in that journey, tried things or done things that your competitors don't even want to touch or dare to touch?
Yeah. You know, my co-founder, Sergey, he always says, you know, Chris, I don't know if you know, but what we're doing is hard. And
Exactly.
so it looks easy on the outside, but when you really get into all the nuance and detail to make a decision, there's a lot of other decisions that have to happen in order to get that thing. And so from the surface, it's like, oh, well, that's easy. We could duplicate that, or we could do that, or we could engineer that. And but there's so much that happens behind the scenes. And so there's been a lot of things that we have done that, haven't worked out, but also we learned a lot in the process. So one interesting thing is, how do you open up new markets when, you may not actually have that customer? But when that customer comes to us and we're out of our league, how do you take on that customer in a way to learn, engineer new product features to take on not only that customer, but more? And so that's happened a lot over the years where, a big company will come in and we're like, okay, yeah, we can do it. And we've got such an amazing team that we'll take that on. We learn a ton and they become a true partner to build the tech to unlock that new opportunity. So franchises for us, right? How do you scale out to 700 locations? And then they need a management system and they need it. So we'll not build it on our own, but man, if we can bring in a customer that we can learn a lot, architect and build product features, functionality to help support them, we can build it in a way that now becomes scalable, unlocks a new opportunity, and now we can go to market to win more of those customers to solve that. So there's been challenges like doing that, and but we've learned a ton and it has unlocked opportunities. So not that we will build it from the ground up, but we'll take on that business to learn.
You take on the various components that you already have and try to apply it to that new use case. Now, well, to that point, talking about trait number one in my book, acknowledge you cannot please everyone. One risk of what you just mentioned is that if every customer comes with a list like that, you just build one-offs. So do you have a framework whereby you say, we're going to say yes to that, we're going to say no to that?
Yeah, I would say it's a framework. I think it's more intuition, right? I just have a lot of experience. My co-founder has a lot of experience. And ultimately, it's, hey, we'll take on that. I love building product. I'm very technical. I can't write code. I'll read an API doc and really just understand opportunity. And so, big customer came in. They've got 500 locations. They wanted a specific billing structure for their franchisees and their franchisors. And so we didn't have it, but awesome. What would it take to build this out? And hey, are other people or other franchisees, would they want this too? And so if the answer is yes, then we will build that. So we don't say yes to every piece of feature and functionality, but one that we can turn into product, right? And put into a plan or as an upsell or an add-on. We're not a services company, we're straight product. But we'll ultimately turn that thing into product. It's been very rare where we have built a feature that was only for one person, maybe a report or something, but most of the product feature we build has, the ability to sell to other customers.
To make well, the core product better, stickier, and so on. One thing you said in an interview, I think that I've picked it up, is okay, you've already talked about addressing genuine pain points, but one thing that stood out to me was ensuring products are indispensable rather than trend dependent. Can you talk to that?
So we have a framework and we haven't evangelized it yet. We're in the process of doing this, but it starts with a philosophy, a methodology, and then a technology. So our philosophy, it's a belief, and we believe conversations are good for business. And it just so happens that the best way to create conversations with your leads and customers is through texting, better than a phone call, better than an email, or at least from that initial engagement. And so the way in which we help companies create more conversations is through a framework called Textize Your Business. And what that means is you can add messaging across your entire life cycle. So you can use it to generate leads, to engage with leads, to qualify leads, to capture data, to book a meeting, to drive revenue, to get a review, to get a referral, to get feedback. And so everywhere in the business, you can use, really, I like to say, a tiny text message to move that forward, right? And so most companies come in and they say, oh, I want it for that. And the reality is, you know, the Textice framework can lay on any business and go, oh, you're looks like you're doing meetings. Do you have a drop-off problem? Yeah, we do. Oh, by sending a text message reminder immediately after to confirm it, and then a reminder leading up to it, you'll increase your attendance by like 20%, and you can automate it. And so just all these little tiny touch points, you know, optimization sort of comes to mind, but it all comes down to just the engagement side. So that's a very unique thing to us. And we've architected our product to sort of layer in the technology to allow people to take advantage of those features, those functionality. So one cool thing we have is the, you know, people are doing social media. So you have swipe up, you know, if you're doing a reel or a story, how do you sort of take that audience that's watching off? And one cool thing we have is you can swipe up and then it'll open up your SMS and you can immediately, you know, we pre-fill with the number and the body text, and all the person has to do is click send. And then immediately now you're in a conversation. And we've got AI agents, so you can have an automated conversation using your brand voice. So how do you, again, use messaging as a way to put people into the funnel, but then also, you know, close the whole loop? So that's what sort of Textice is in a nutshell.
I love the way you bring up that example, because I mean, actually I wrote this morning on the topic that's, let me phrase it this way. A lot of, in the sales at SaaS world, the world that I live in, a lot of the sales is done and it's feature comparison.
Mm-hmm.
My belief is that, yes, you should have all the features and a lot of it is table stake, but how you differentiate is not in your features, but is in your approach, which is just what you explained there. Because your approach is your thinking, your belief, everything that goes in with the heart and the passion for the product. And with that, you solve problems in a completely different way. And that's what competitors cannot copy, because they can they can take your feature, but the approach in order to how it all stick together, you can't do that. And that's also, I think, a great example of how to be different, not just better. I love that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, again, most companies are what companies, which is it's product, feature, you know. Yeah. But very few companies lean into the why. We've been a what company. And so now we're sort of flipping the script on the why and really the belief. You know, Simon Sinek talks a lot about, you know, the best companies in the world are why companies. So for us, you know, the methodology is that process. Now we need to do a good job of really evangelizing that. But it does create a unique sort of blue ocean opportunity, because now you're not just a line item of a feature. It's like, oh yeah, we have the feature, but here's how we think, right? And now you create alignment and brand, really.
Yeah, well, you make people think about that problem in a different way, and put things in context. Because like you say, I come for this, but then the whole kimono opens up.
Totally.
When did it suddenly click for you that this was the route to go? Because I mean, I think what you've done is not, you didn't build a new product for this. You started to dig up that approach, what works and how can we make this sort of a playbook for customers, automate it, get best results out of a product. When did that click in?
Yeah, you know, HubSpot has been a good model for us, right? And model for me, because again, messaging plays a part. Your sales team can use it. Your customer support team can use it. Your marketing team can use it. Your ops team can use it. And so it's not just a, you know, app specifically for them. It's your whole, you know, it's the one app your company needs. So having it all in just, you know, one messaging platform makes sense, because everybody wants to simplify. They want it all integrated, right? And they don't want more tools. They want less deeply integrated tools together. And so let's be the best in the world for companies that want to simplify and scale. And so whether that's, you know, We have small companies, we have large companies, and they have one user or 1,000 users. They may have one number, 100 numbers. They may have one country or 300 countries they want to scale out. So for us, that's always sort of our, how are we going to make it easy for companies to scale? And so it didn't start that way. You know, it just was like, I want to do two-way texting. Okay. You know, and then over time, you're like, oh, well, people want inboxes, multiple inboxes. Oh, they want calling from there. And so, you know, it's just been this continual layer. But the vision has always been this all-in-one messaging platform for sales, marketing, support teams. And so how do you lean into that vision? And that comes with, you know, deep-rooted integrations and functionality and, you know, from the surface, it looks easy, but you know, when you get into all the details, it's not as easy as I'm sure you.
No, exactly. You know. No, it's an evolution, and it's what I like about what you're doing is that you didn't start from okay, we are this. You started from the problem, and you found your way through technology to solve that problem in a way that keeps evolving. And I mean, in 2 years' time, it might be a different way again. Talking about in relation, well, aim to be different, not just better, but that mastering the art of curiosity, which is trait number 4 in my book. How do you ensure that it's not only you and your co-founder that are curious, but everybody in the business? How do you get leverage out of that?
You know, I love Kaizen. And so I was in, real quick story, but in college, I did an operations management course and the teacher was so boring. But I learned about like optimization, and it was like Deming and, you know, all these things with just like the optimization of things. And so I just am always looking to improve and optimize. And so the way that we see parts of the business is everything is a product, right? And so we're a product-led company, but in sales and customer support and customer success, everyone has improvements, right? They have features that they need, and there's bugs. So how do you create the same structure? So I like to say everyone can run on rails, right? They all speak the same language. Yeah. We're all learning, you know, improving and moving in a sprint cycle. So taking sort of the best practices for staying curious and fixing things and improving things. And so we're not the best in the world, but we've done a lot of things well within the company. So people don't just see something on the surface, right? Hey, dig a little bit deeper. So what I like to do, in fact, I did it today, which is I hopped into our Pipedrive account, right? And from our, like our app, like how is our app performing in Pipedrive? Cause you know, you start here, you layer on stuff, but man, there's new stuff that they came out with that we haven't taken advantage of. So what I like to do is I like to just create a document. We use Confluence. So we have 3 columns and it's just issue, like screenshot or Loom, and then the Jira ticket. And so I'll just go through and just create a log list and just like dump everything that we can improve. Hey, they opened a new API to do like onboarding. Oh, well, let's do that. And so you just get into this process of consistently improving, right? Kaizenifying continuous improvement. And so, well, how do you teach the team to do that? And hey, here's a simple way to do it. So when you go into something, don't just assume that's the way it is. That's the way we've always done it. You know, destroy the status quo and always look for those opportunities. If you're banging your head against the wall, doing the same thing over and over again, why? Like, speak up, you know, and because if we don't know, if you don't sell us, then how can we improve something in your process? You know, if it's taking you 15 clicks and you've been doing it for like a month or 3 months or 6 months, like speak up, you know, because we want to improve that and make that, you know, make that part
That's
of
cultural.
Your job. That's culture, you know? And so
I mean, a lot of companies don't have that because it's not listened to. Nothing is done with it. It's sometimes even punished or, well, you get a reaction that you do it 2 times, 3 times, and they say, no. But if you encourage it.
Yeah. And like, well, how do you kickstart that? There's a really great book. Funny enough, I get Harvard Business Review in. And to be honest, I never read it. And like 6 months ago, I was like, you know what? Let me open this thing up. So I read through it. I'm like, oh, I read this article about how to remove friction. And it's this guy, this author, Bob Sutton, and he wrote a book called The Friction Project. And in every company, there's friction. Everyone knows there's friction, but how do you sort of bring forward the friction across the company and then actually fix it? And so what I like our team to do is, hey, just as you're going throughout your day, create a friction list. What are the things that you're just, you see friction? Hey, record a quick loom or get a screenshot and just log it. Get it out of your mind. It's not about how you think you need to fix it. It's just get it out of your head and then let the team figure out how to make it better. And so, you know, I wish everybody did it, but everyone's going through friction. And so we have to just log it. And so it's a simple process for everyone to log it. And then, hey, let's seek to improve it. There's some things, like I've talked to ChatGPT, like, how do we really get the whole company to do it? All right, let's incentivize, let's bonus, let's, you know, create a more fun, engaging process rather than, I got to log this thing, you know. But how do you make it easy? Because like, if you have a whole crazy process to like log a ticket, no one's going to do it. So
well, it needs to be frictionless.
That's right. It's got to be frictionless. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And also that even bringing the question up needs to be frictionless, and it needs to be something that, yeah, you feel you contribute to something, because together mm-hmm. you're a stronger team.
Totally.
Looking also at the time, one thing that I'm always curious about, because this is about, you know, you're building a software company that's a business, like you said, and not just income. In today's world, where everything is changing so fast, where the technology is yeah, at your fingertips in terms of what you can do and so on. How do you keep the team on their toes in terms of creating new value possibilities rather than just chipping in and improving without the risk at the end to not be that novel anymore in 3 years' time?
I mean, we have to stay at the cutting edge of messaging, and we also have to do it semi-quick. So X for me has become my pipe of new, right? New things that are coming out, new ways people are using AI. I mean, every day, I'm sure if you're on X, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm already behind. And so, so one is like, hey, we have implemented AI in some of the typical ways. So like one of the things we have is just, hey, rewrite this text, summarize the message. We have like AI transcripts for calls, and we'll provide summaries. But then how do we get to that easy button, right? If we really audited the entire business, man, it takes 7 steps to do the thing. What if like it took none and we just like did it and said, hey, do you want that? And so it's just this, again, this critical eye to simplify. And so AI can, again, get rid of this messy middle of all this stuff. There's a really phenomenal article by Reforge with Brian Balfour, and it's called Product Market Fit Collapse. And the idea with that was you have all these companies that spend all this time building all this tech to solve a problem. And, you know, it takes you 5, 6, 7, 8 steps to do the thing, right? All the tech and information, all the stuff to build it. And then AI comes in and goes, oh, that's really nice because I just wiped all that out. And so that's this next future of companies is AI is going to take that business and make it obsolete. So how do you disrupt yourself? So there's a great article or a quote. I think it was Kieran. He was the VP of marketing at HubSpot. And he's like, you know, we had to disrupt ourselves before someone else does. So we always take that approach. Like, how are we going to disrupt ourselves before someone else does? All right, what are we going to do? How do we disrupt ourselves? And so, you know, just leaning into, hey, you know what? We got to kill that product, because the reality is that actually doesn't solve the problem. What really solves the problem is this. And so just asking yourself, how can we disrupt ourselves before somebody else does? Because someone will at some point, and you hope to be there first. You know, small scrappy startups can just focus on that one use case, and they become the product, right?
Yeah, exactly. So like you say, you're a scale up, you got 60 people working for you, there is 8 years of product. I mean, I've been in a similar situation, possibly with more products in the portfolio, but that thing that you just said, disrupt yourself, being willing to kill that product, because if you don't kill it, someone else will come and it will kill you. Yeah. I know how hard these conversations can be, because there's an investor that doesn't care about, well, first of all, they don't want things to stop that currently are running. You know? And killing something means also you have to start building from scratch again. Possibly it's faster the second time or the third time, but still, you know, there's going to be this dip that you have to go through in order to get to this bigger hump again.
Yeah.
How do you go about those decisions? Because these are not easy.
I wouldn't say very carefully. It's, you know, we take things in stages, right? So we have, you know, we call it MTP, so minimum testable product, get to table stakes, and then get to like advanced, right? Like that's more the optimization side. So, you know, there's always, like, I'm always analyzing our product and just saying, how can we make it easier? What can we get rid of? Because, you know, you don't really always want to add stuff. Sometimes you may need to subtract. So, in fact, most of the times you need to subtract and get to like simple product. So, you know, we have product meetings twice a week. You know, I'm always talking to my co-founder, and, you know, I'm the crazy guy of like, man, what about that? Oh my gosh, have you seen this? And so I'm just bringing up, you know, all this disruption because not that I'm fearful, but sometimes we need to move really quick in order to sort of get that outcome. So there's been some things on the books that I'm like, guys, we need to go. We need to get that done now. And so it's partially me setting the tone for like ambitious things. And so I mean, we've got some really amazing products coming out soon that will enable businesses to send leads. AI agents are having real conversations in a brand voice, capturing data and booking meetings. That's a disruption, right? So we need to get there fast, quick, and be the best in the world. I heard a great podcast with Mark Robert. She was the former VP of sales at HubSpot. And he was interviewing, I think it was a CMO of like Cloudflare. And he's like, don't focus so much on verticals and industries, but focus on use case. Because if you can focus on use case, the vertical and the industry doesn't matter so much. And so, but man, if you can nail that use case, become the best in the world, you can get to all the industry. You can get to all those verticals. So for me, it's now this new lens of what's the use case here? And then how do we double down, market to it, talk about it, evangelize it, and show that we truly are the best in the world? And that's focus. Sometimes that's really hard to do when you got so much, right? And that's the flex.
Yeah, exactly. But the saying is always, okay, you're doing well, you know, you're on this growth trajectory. And then a lot of companies go into this complacency mode, like we're doing fine. Nothing is going to hurt us. That's, of course, where things start to slow down.
Right.
And at the end, the best moment to do something radically different, and well, I hate the word disrupt, but to disrupt yourself again, to work on something that is going to be making an impact in 2 years' time, is at that moment where you are at your strength.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you see that as well?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there comes a time where you have to place a bet. And, you know, I think we're constantly innovating, constantly producing. You know, one of the things you have here is master creating momentum. And so one of the things that we hear from customers often is, wow, you guys are always coming out with new stuff. You're always improving. You're always, and people want to be on a team, or at least a company that is, one, listening, and then actually like shipping. Yeah. So my co-founder, Sergey, is a, you know, we call him the machine, because the train shows up on time and it goes. And so things ship out, but also we let our customers know. So we've got, you know, a product newsletter that goes out on time. We've got, you know, all the in-app notifications that always talk about new features. So sometimes just focusing on product and announcements creates momentum, and people want to invest in a company that is doing things, it is innovating, is creating, versus a company that hasn't shipped something in 6 months. So that's momentum.
I mean, we could talk about this for days, for years, but you already kind of touched upon another trait in the book, you know, mastering the art of creating momentum. That's a whole different chapter.
Oh yeah.
Well, last question in this round. From all the lessons that you've learned in your entrepreneurial career, so it means to going back to 2009 and then kind of closing down that company, building version two of the company, and ending up where you are right now, what would be a do and what would be a don't that you'd like to share with other tech entrepreneurs out there?
We haven't raised any money. And so, you know, being bootstrapped has allowed us to be very particular with how we're growing the business. I get hit up all the time with investors, and the game has changed. And so the days of like, I've got an idea, I want to raise money, good luck, right? Especially as a first-time founder. And so you can create that MVP and go and start to sell. You know, on X, I read about all these great stories of just, you know, these sort of hacky founders that find a little niche and they go and they really build it out. So to go from idea to product can happen very quickly. I've been playing with Lovable and Replit. You know, I built some little tools that we need that have been in my head that has been in a backlog forever. And now I literally built it in a couple hours. It's published, it's live, people are using it. And so to go from idea to testing is everything. So the do is just go, just build it, figure it out, start to hack and learn and put it out there. And through the process of just putting something out there, oh, now I need to learn SEO or on-page optimization and all those things. And so that would be my approach today is like, just go create something, figure it out. And that's the way you're going to learn. I think the don't is it's difficult to do it on your own. And so, you know, I'm blessed to have a great co-founder. So we have a very good sort of Venn diagram. He likes to say, oh, we've got a good Venn diagram. Like, I'm very technical. You know, I can write well, I can speak well, like I know marketing and strategy, but I can also get in the weeds and, you know, I can get the ideas, help formulate the ideas. And then Sergey is really building upon the ideas. He's not an idea guy. I'm the idea guy, but I'm not just an idea guy, right? So having somebody that, you know, we have effectively gone to war with, like, together, and we're in it together. And so the good's good, the bad, but we've got each other's backs. And so it's going at it alone, especially when building, you know, a software company. You really need a in my case, you know, somebody that you can build something great with. You can build great businesses today, but if you really want to build a phenomenal company, it's difficult to do it on your own. So, you know, that would be one. And then building a great team, you know, a remote company. And so that has its pros. It also has its cons. So, yeah.
Thanks. Thanks for sharing the story, inspiring what you're doing. Also in this whole thing of like this at scale, you're doing it in a way that's respectful with your product. It builds relations. It's something genuine that I actually would like to receive, you know, because that's what it's all about. So where can people go to find out more about Sales Message or to say hi to you?
Yeah, salesmessage.com. And then I'm on LinkedIn. So that's probably the best place. So Chris Bersan, find me on there, send me a message, say hello, and check us out.
So, let's do that. Thank you.
Awesome. Ton, thank you so much, man.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah.
And that wraps up my conversation with Chris Bersan, CEO and co-founder of Sales Message. If you got value from this episode, please share it with other SaaS founders who need to hear this as well. And if you got 10 seconds, a quick rating or review on Apple Podcasts will help more people to find these conversations. Thank you for listening to the Remarkable SaaS Podcast. If you want more insights like this, subscribe to my daily email, Espresso with Ton. It's a 2-minute shot of clarity for SaaS founders who want to create pull, not push. You can sign up, along with getting my book, at valueinspiration.com. See you in the next episode.